is that this proposal maintains the targets and specifically says in the aggregate we must have 30% or more of TIF dollars for affordable housing. Is that correct?
Yes.
So I just want to assure our friends from the League, because I know, Debbie, you were at the table during a lot of the committee work, that we are not abandoning the 30%. I believe what we are doing is continuing the momentum of that policy. We're making some technical changes. We're clarifying what the practice has been, aggregate minimum. But I want to assure you and the good folks at the League that we are in no way abandoning this policy, and I don't think this council would stand for that, but that is not what is happening. So I turn it over to my distinguished president if there are other questions from the on my colleagues.
So welcome, Tracy.
Thank you.
In your new capacity. So as I'm reading the policy, so we can now invest in up to 100% of median in projects that provide
that actually has not been a change.
Okay.
It is what we did. The last ordinance did say 80%, but there is now and was in 2006. I could refer you to page one of attachment A that specifically calls out one instance, and that was in the 2006 policy, but I had to go back and check as well.
Mm-hmm.
When we've got three bedroom units or more, they can be restricted to 100% MFI and below.
Oh, okay, great. And this new policy, does it state unambiguously that for new urban renewal areas that student housing is not eligible for set-aside funding?
I don't think it actually says that in the policy.
What the policy says on student housing is that it is the council would decide. It does not specifically say it's in or it's out because it's agnostic on that point. But it makes clear that it would take an action of the council to place student housing into the mix. And that would specifically require council action. It cannot happen without authorization by the council.
Council as opposed to PDC?
Well, it would have to happen probably by both. But this body would have to vote to reallocate funds in a current or future district to a purpose that is not specifically enumerated. We do not have a current policy on student housing, so if there was a proposal, which there is not currently before us, but if in the future there was a proposal to fund student housing, for example, that would require a vote of the council, in effect, to permit that and modify the policy.
So I guess maybe not clear why we are being so agnostic about that. I mean, these are real life possibilities that will be discussed in the context of a innovation quadrant, and I don't think of your stakeholders believe that student housing should be eligible for this money.
Well, Commissioner Dan, to that point, what we are on a regular basis in conversations with people about all kinds of uses of TIF that don't fit within our policy. There are neighborhoods in this and districts in this city that don't agree necessarily with the guidelines and targets which have been established, believe that there should be more for home ownership than for rental, those kinds of things. There are discussions about, you know, proposals for student housing and other things. We did not want our policy to anticipate every potential variation of existing policy. We wanted to be clear that any change in this policy would require the concurrence of PDC and the council. And we think that's the best safeguard. And ultimately, then and now, this council has the authority to modify this proposal with a majority vote. Always has been. So we didn't feel it was important. We did not think it was appropriate as part of the committee process to anticipate every possible use and then set up a contingency.
So we make no statements about home ownership versus rental.
Home ownership is specified in the income guide, is in the particular targets by district and the income guidelines. There are splits around rental housing and within certain ranges, home ownership. Those have already been established in 2006, and we have not changed those targets. If, for example, I'll give you an example, if let's say in the future, someone proposes, for example, to use TIF in another district to deal with foster children or a different kind of use than we currently fund. That, for example, could come to council and be voted on, and the council and its discretion could decide to allocate that money. We did not think in this policy review it appropriate to set up a contingency for how we would address that question. Any member of the council has the right to come forward with a funding proposal and how a current or future district would be expended. This requires action by PDC and the commission.
So, okay, I appreciate that explanation. But I just thought there was, I was under the impression that the majority of the stakeholders felt student housing shouldn't be covered. Is that part correct? I just want to make sure I'm...
So to my knowledge on the set-aside committee, we've never tested majority of stakeholders. There's certainly a lot of stakeholders that aren't not a fan of the idea of using it for student housing. As a developer, recovering developer, I know that the regulations around things like one-year leases and low-income housing tax credits, which we use in, would you say, most of our developments, specifically prohibit people being a full-time student. You can take a couple credits, but I don't think most people consider that student housing.
Okay.
So I would say that, and then I would say that very often full-year leases are required. Again, not so much for student housing always.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you for your presentation. And on process, sometimes a good process results in both chambers of the House being filled, as it was in 2006. I remember sitting right up there with my sign in my jeans, which were much more comfortable than what I'm wearing today. And sometimes a good process results in a lesser number of folks who've been following the process coming in at the end with their concerns. And so either way, I think that this particular process and Commissioner Fish's leadership of it is evidence that there has been a good amount of vetting in the community with stakeholders, with everybody to get to this proposal. Because otherwise you could met that there would be both chambers of the House filled and we would be here until late into the evening. So thank you for that, Commissioner Fish, and for everybody who's participated. I just have some questions about the numbers and how you got to the percentages in the set-asides. I note that there's the 30% floor system-wide, and then we have a number of 18% for Central East Side, 21% for Downtown Waterfront, and 26% for Oregon Convention Center, which are the three that are less than 30%. Gateway, Interstate, Lentz, and River District right at 30%, North McAdam at 36, and South Park Blocks at 52. How did you get to those numbers?
Okay, I'll do my best, and then Jacob will tell me when I'm wrong. So this is what we've tried not to say because it's sort of the geeky policy part, the blended portion of the event. So for the first 5 years of the policy, we were going on expenditures in terms of how we hit our numbers. Going forward, we're going against revenue. So that's one reason some of these numbers look different than they did 5 years ago. And in some cases, like South Park Blocks, it's actually a much higher number. Because of the aforementioned preservation, we actually ended up spending a lot more money on affordable housing. So yay for that. Most of these numbers are the same numbers that they were in 2006, with a few exceptions. North McAdam was, so the original language was very detailed in a couple of cases, trying to speak to the fact that every district is different. So in North McAdam, the council wanted 39% for the first 5 years and then 30% for the second 5 years. We haven't changed it. That ends up getting reflected here as 36%. Let's see. Downtown Waterfront is the same as it was in 06. Convention Center is the same as it was in 06. Interstate is the same. Lentz is the same. River District is the same. South Park Blocks is more, and Central East Side is more by 3%, which I believe reflects actual expenditures, including on Hooper Detox.
Thank you. Yes, and that's a good one. I appreciate that explanation. So, for instance, the South Park Blocks 1 reflects actual expenditures and a higher percentage because we did the preservation housing. Is that correct?
Correct.
And so some have expressed concern that we would be targeting more affordable housing to Gateway and points east of 205, and that's not in the plan.
Those numbers are the same.
And we are talking here
We're also, just to be clear, we're talking about TIF.
I was just about to say that, Commissioner.
Oh, excuse me.
Yeah. We're talking about TIF, which is not the same as the tax increment financing in urban renewal districts, which there are other programs of tax abatements, which Commissioner Fish is also leading another process, which we'll be coming back to Council about in the future.
Many processes.
Good. You know, process can get you some very good results. And so thank you. I think that covers. So the only 100% home ownership is for those larger housing units for families.
Correct.
And the rest. And could you just speak quickly to Susan Emmons' point about we don't need to be investing as much in the 30 to 80% because we have a surplus of those housing units?
I could try. I could see if Jacob has something brilliant to say about that.
Well, first, I was just impressed by her first answer because she's only been
impressed
here 2 weeks.
Impressed is a euphemism.
That was good. So I think at Commissioner Fish's office and at the Portland Housing Bureau, we absolutely agree with Susan's comments that there is a need for 0 to 30. I think the thing that I would add, though, is for properties that are developed at 60%, as she pointed out, actually, Section 8 voucher holders, tenant-based voucher holders, many times go to those units. So even though the unit's set at 60, the person living in that unit many times can be 0 to 30. I think Commissioner Fish made an excellent point, and Susan did as well, that developing 0 to 30 is tough, and it takes a huge upfront investment, and we simply don't have it in all of these districts. So we do need that ongoing operating support or ongoing rental subsidy to couple with our city investment in order to really achieve a lot of scale at the 0 to 30 level.
And I guess I'd like to sort of just reaffirm, as Commissioner Fish did, the Bureau's commitment to 0 to 30. I think it is the only income range that is called out in our strategic plan. I think, frankly, the commissioner knew what he was getting into when he hired me, and I've got a big commitment to 0 to 30, and I know that he does, and that the whole Bureau does. So I would echo Susan's comment in that we can do better, and we will.
Thank you. Those are my questions, and I just had a comment, which was to commend Habitat for Humanity on being able to provide home ownership for people at 41% of median family income. That is a great model for an investment of $35,000 of city money to then put that money back into the community in the construction, leverage it with volunteers, and I think that's maybe what you're alluding to in part with your thinking of how we've got, and Commissioner Fish also, as federal resources continue to dwindle, we've got to find more ways to get more for the public money. And I really appreciated that example because it shows that it can be done, it has been done, and we must continue to do it. So thank you very much for this presentation, Commissioner Fish. Do you want to have any closing remarks?
Randy, do you have anything?
I'm very impressed by the collaborative work that's been done, having worked with Commissioner Sting closely when we developed this policy. What is remarkable is what's not being said. There was a lot of antipathy at the time directed towards the Portland Development Commission. We developed this policy and a number of other very specific policies there's no other way to characterize it, but to reel in a PDC that a lot of us felt was out of control. And I only say that in the context of the current PDC that is very much collaborative, working with the council, but is, I think, remarkably more effective in developing this kind of housing, and particularly with Commissioner Fish doing the great work he's done. Of course, I'm a huge fan of Tracy's, and I'm so pleased you're on board.
Thank you.
I'll just wrap up, Madam President, by thanking my team, Jacob, Tracy, Danielle, everyone who's here. Really appreciate it. This is not the glamorous part of our work, but you kept faith with what we committed to, which is you engaged the community, including the activists, in reviewing this policy and making recommendations. We have brought those recommendations forward. These, I think, over time will enhance the program. But our challenge is not about adding or subtracting details from this program. Our challenge is finding a replacement source of funding to continue our work in the future. Because as we debate the merits of this and our collective commitment to continue this work, we face looming shortages of funding at every level, which will make our work even harder. I can't tell you how pleased I am to have the leadership team we now have at the Bureau, and to have, in addition to the crack team that you inherited, our new director. And I want to thank you for the work you did on this, and I look forward to the work we're going to do ahead. And this will, of course, go to a vote next week. So thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you. That concludes this week's session of the Portland City Council.
Thank you, Dan.